The Office of Personnel Management's electronic questionnaires for investigations processing system is offline now after the agency says it found a security vulnerability. The site will be offline for 4 to 6 weeks, according to OPM. They have not said that that discovery comes out of the 30-day cyber sprint that federal CIO Tony Scott has called for. Karen Evans is executive director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge and former eGov administrator at the Office of Management and Budget, and watching where the agencies as they respond to Tony Scott's call for the 30-day cyber sprint. My colleague Jason Miller, Karen, reported this yesterday as a change in OPM's evaluation of the risk to the EQIP site. What happens and how quickly can things happen that cause somebody to make a decision that the risk posture has changed from one place to another and they can't take the risk any longer? Thanks for being on today, Karen.
Well, thanks for having me. And as you know, cybersecurity is near and dear to my heart, so we're going to be talking about a bunch of these different things. But given the question that you're just asking, if you know when you are managing your technical environment and you're managing your information holds, one day you could say that it's at a certain level. And then based on what is happening out in the greater fear, right? You're looking, you're monitoring a bunch of different things that are happening. It could change overnight. It could change hourly. As soon as something that normally would not be out there, and so say one of these things that you've been reading about, you know, 0 days now is out now in the wild, or one of the research things, and that's on your platform, that can change the whole dynamic within a matter of minutes. That's why when you ask, I'm going to kind of jump to some of these other things, when you start talking about like continuous diagnostics and mitigation, or you know, information security continuing monitoring, depending on which way you look at these programs, you have to know what your information holds are, what the technical platforms are, what your configurations are set to, and it could change in a matter of seconds.
The changes can involve, I imagine, also internal and external forces, Karen?
Oh, absolutely. So there, given what is happening with OPM right now and their heightened awareness, I mean, if you just really take a look at everything going on, so their risk level now is really low. So it could be something that in this particular EQIP system, which, by the way, I have used myself, that normally you would continue to operate business, but because of all of these other what I would call external awareness or political interest, and I'm using politics all over the place on this, what you would normally tolerate as an acceptable risk is probably now not going to be tolerated because they want to make sure that everything is working the way that it needs to work.
So it's also reasonable then to assume that pressures that are completely unrelated to the technology posture or the cybersecurity posture of an organization can have an impact on that too. If somebody decides, and I don't mean to throw stones at OPM here, but they're obviously under a lot of pressure. And so if they saw something in the EQIP system where they said, you know what, we just want to dot all the I's and cross all the T's, so we're going to take the system offline. This is a logical progression of that. Is that fair to say, Karen?
Yes, because their risk level now, their operating risk level is low. They're not going to take a high risk, right? The demand for doing certain things or providing certain services. So if you were to translate this outside the federal government and you go into private industry, the demand on some of these things are not as great as the risk associated with them making a mistake.
Would it make
So you would take it down because now you have to balance that operational risk against, does it really make a lot of sense? And so their tolerance is low. So something that, just like you said, something that you normally would continue to operate and maybe you would put a compensating control in and monitor it, you're not willing to take that chance right now given everything that's going on.
Is it reasonable to think that during this 30-day cyber sprint there might be more things like this that pop up where somebody goes, you know, on second look, we thought this was okay, and now we're in a posture we just don't want to take a chance? I imagine there will be some that we never hear about because they're not maybe citizen-facing or user, public-facing as much as something like EQIP. or whatever. But my thought is that we probably shouldn't be surprised, and we should probably be encouraged if we hear more instances like this in during the rest of this 30-day sprint.
Oh, absolutely, because that's the whole purpose. I mean, this and looking at the entire security program that the agencies have been doing, that is the whole purpose of the 30-day program, right? You're supposed to. This is really taking a look at what you should have been doing all along, looking at it again and saying, okay, have we really, what is the risk level we want to live with? Have we really managed it appropriately? Do we have the right controls in place? Are we patching critical vulnerabilities the way we should be? Do all these people need to have privilege access? And have we implemented the two-factor control to the extent that we can? That this is taking everything that they should be doing, making it accelerated, and really taking a strong risk posture look at what does the federal government do.
What goes into determining a risk posture at any given time? How do you decide, other than obvious, the pressures that we've seen because of OPM, what are the things that make you say, today, we want to do things differently than we did things yesterday?
Okay, so if you take things aside, okay, and say OPM never happened.
Correct.
The way that you would really look at this, and so people are going to go, oh, my gosh, I can't believe she's going back to this stuff. But this is what the NIST publications, the special publications, are really about. So if you look at the Federal Information Processing Standard 199, what that's really about is you look at your information hold. So an agency, say, for example, an agency is going to start a new information collection, they would really look at that data and say, okay, what do I really need to do? Why am I collecting this data? And then how do I protect this data? Is it low? Is it moderate? Is it high? What kind of data? And if it's used in the aggregate? And then you build your risk and your security controls around the type of information that you're collecting and that you're holding.
The security risk posture then, and examining all of that information, how do you then? But how do you take that then, and decide that this is the time to do it? I guess I'm back to this question that we talked about a little bit earlier, and I want to pull the string a little bit about what's different today than yesterday.
Well, so.
Or is it just
part of it really is dealing with, and I think part of it is the mindset of what the 30-day sprint is also trying to do, right? And you're really dealing with a major culture change. And I think you saw this last year as OPM was going through, and some of the comments that Jeff Wagner had made about, and this is a basic fundamental change. So if you operate under the premise that you can actually establish a perimeter and secure the perimeter, that's an old model. And you see that that's what happened with Bradley Manning, right? That's what happened with the Edward Snowden. That's the insider threat type of thing. But if you operate and you change the dynamic and say, okay, they're already here, now how do I detect them and how do I protect the information that I have, that then crafts a whole different way that you look at what is the problem set that you're trying to really solve. And I think you're seeing now the confluence of several of those pieces, because the idea that you can actually create a perimeter and put a lock on it, those days are gone. And I think everybody has realized, and somebody said this, and this came from out of the cyber camp from one of our sponsors, it's really a chessboard now. It's not, hey, here's the gate and here's the lock and now I can protect the information. You are looking at the chessboard and saying, how do I protect now my information? And now I'm making this move, the adversary is going to make another move, and you want to plan a strategy so that you can win.
I didn't mean it to sound like I was trying to yank your chain, and I think the idea of we're doing this because we're changing the culture, or we're doing this because I just feel in my gut this is a bad idea, or we just can't do it that way anymore, I think all of those are fine answers when you're doing risk calculations. That's what we entrust people in those decision-making positions to do. I was just trying to get a sense of whether those were some of the actual components that go into those kinds of decisions.
And I would say it's yes to all of those.
Yeah, and I think it's fine if all of those are the case. I think maybe some of the reason that we have gotten into the situation that we've gotten into is that we follow the checklist and then find out later the checklist is not as comprehensive as we wish it would have been.
Well, okay, and so that's the big fundamental issue. You know, like if we had some of my other compatriots on here, like Alan Paller, he says that, you know, that is the danger, that if you put together a checklist, that, you know, people think, well, I do the checklist and I'm done. That's the difference between compliance, right? I'm going to do compliance and get the things out there, and here's my checklist, versus actually managing the risk. And so you're asking about managing risk and doing it on a, you know, I would say minute by minute, because you really do. I mean, it's a culture. It has to be ingrained in you, because you're always looking at the environment and always managing it and saying, I've got to make a change in order to properly secure this stuff and to put in these mitigating strategies. If you go by, here's the list and I've done the list, then that's a point in time, right? Okay, I've done the list. I'm done now for 12 months. I don't have to go back and do the list now for another 12 months. That's not how you have to manage these programs.
No, I think all that makes perfect sense. And I don't want it to sound like I'm suggesting that everybody should just fly by the seat of their pants. But it does seem to me that based on what people like Alan and your colleague Frank Reeder and you and others have told me about this, and folks that are outside the government sphere, it seems like we have treated this maybe more as science, the risk management piece of it, not the cyber piece, as science rather than art. And maybe we should think about it from a more creative's not the right word, but it's the best one that I can think of right now, way, and just kind of maybe more strategically or conceptually than as rigidly as it seems some folks have done so.
Well, and I think people want to do a good job, right? So it's really the due diligence. It's like, okay, I there's certain activities that I have to do. So therefore, if I do those, and I am not, so for all the people that like compliance, I am not, I'm probably a little different from Frank and Alan from the aspect of that I think there's a certain amount of compliance that's going to get you to a certain level of security anyway. You know, so even if you did a little, if you did compliance, that's a little bit that's better than you doing nothing at all. But you have to really analyze, okay, somebody said, here are a certain set of things that I have to do that are minimally going to get me to a certain level. Now, I have to really look at what services do I provide, what kind of information do I have, and I have to analyze that in the environment that it's operating in. And that's that continuous diagnostics that you have to do so that you can then mitigate the technical platform that it's on.
All right. That's where I want to go next. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk some more about the CDM piece of this. Karen Evans, former eGov administrator, now executive director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge, my guest. And we'll continue our conversation in a minute. We talked a little bit before the break, Karen, about continuous diagnostics and mitigation, CDM. And everybody says, right after they talk about CDM, they always say it's not the silver bullet. And then it seems to me sometimes folks continue to talk about it like it's the silver bullet.
Well, and I think if CDM is implemented right and appropriately, then that's not going to happen. And, you know, a lot of people, when they start hearing about CDM, they immediately drop to technology, but it's actually a combination of several things. And so when you're really looking at it, what you're trying to do is streamline and automate a lot of the manual processes that you have embedded into your security program or into your overall IT operations. And so when you do that, then what that's going to do, so if you think back to our discussion about risk, then it's going to prioritize the fixes. So if you're being measured on how many patches did you put in today, and you put in 100 patches, but you really only needed to put one because that was the one that was the most vulnerable and it's also probably the hardest, what CDM is going to help you do is get the one patch that is more critical, that is going to reduce your risk overall. It's going to help you prioritize those. So if you put 100 patches in that don't do anything to improve your risk posture, that's not really very good. And what this is going to do is help automate that and prioritize the patches as you apply them. I mean, that's one aspect of it.
What are you and the others that are paying attention to this stuff on the cutting edge of cybersecurity looking at to be the next thing coming after CDM, Karen?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to go back to you really need the people, and that's why I'm really focused on the people, because it's not going to be this is the technology. It's going to be a technology solution in combination with several pieces like the two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication, right? That continues to evolve. So the debate right now is two-factor okay if I send you, you know, a random PIN that comes to your cell phone? Well, that's better than what you have right now if you're only using PIN and password, right? And is that the whole thing going to using the card with biometrics? So there's going to be multiple technologies that are out there. What you really need, to me, are people who can look at this, go back to what you were talking about earlier, and really be familiar with the agency's information holdings, and then say, okay, let's craft a program around this level of risk and that we're constantly monitoring it and managing it.
One final thought. I've heard more in the last 3 weeks about the Trusted Internet Connection program than I have since you left the Office of Management and Budget, so I'll give you a minute to gloat if you want to.
You know, that whole piece in combination with HSPD-12, which we didn't talk about, but HSPD-12, and I was just talking about the multi-factor authentication, mm-hmm. I really don't care what you call the programs. I mean, what that is it's validation about what is my attack surface. You know, I need to make sure I'm really looking at users and privileged users and what privileges I allow them to have and what access. And then how do you manage it? And then how do you monitor it, which is the CDM. We didn't call it CDM, but that was the implementation of the Einstein program. So you have to really know what your traffic is and who are valid users and who are not valid users. Now, that's the point of Andy Osmond's testimony is that if your credentials get taken, so that's why you have to have the multi-factor authentication, right? If your password's taken, you're going to look valid. So you have to have this multi-factor, this multi-tiered approach to user logins.